everybody. It's Wayne with Mark and Areeb, and we are so excited that you've come to watch the Eat Community Podcast. We know you're going to enjoy it. We actually did it live originally on our Eat Community webinar series, which we also invite you to come to, but you will love this podcast that you're going to be listening to right now.
Appreciate everybody being here. We've got a great little audience. Got people from all over. Man, I'm gonna call one person out because he's actually a staff member. He's got a tooth right now that is really bothering him. So I'm not going to ask him to talk, although it's up to him if he wants to. But Russ Biagne, Russ is on. He's actually local. He's here in the Boise area. And I really like this. I don't know why that muted me, Mark. That was weird. Why did it just, because you could still see me fine, right?
Yeah, I think maybe something happened on my end, probably touched something by mistake.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe I touched something. I don't know. I'm going to, you know.
Because I cannot see Wayne's control, but yeah, he was talking at 1 second, then the next second it was not coming.
Right. No, it's fine now.
So for everybody, just because we like to be very transparent, and I like people to know who we are and what we do, my office is a very, you're looking at my office. I have a big screen in front of me here, which I'm watching this on. There's another screen right there that I can also look with another laptop, and you're seeing another side of my office there. But the stuff you see behind is really sort of me. I'm a weather geek, so I like to kind of know what temperatures are. So that's a thermometer there that both shows the inside temperature and the outside. This is a photo of one of my dogs, but it doesn't look that way. When I see it, it looks like a kangaroo. I don't know what it looks like to you guys. But right next to it was something that I had lost somewhere and found it in the move. That's me. That's a trophy I won probably in about 1984, a long time ago, when I won the Open tennis tournament for the state of Idaho, which is just bizarre that I found that and get it sometime. This is a very cool metal carving that a really good friend of mine made. It's kind of a prize gift from her. This is a topographic depiction of the U.S. on a map. I think I showed it one time. There's a photo behind me here. It just showed up. I'm going to grab it and bring it up here. That one right there. Let's see how. And I want you guys to interact. Get on your keyboards and interact with me. And this is this new platform for us. So I think it's going to be real easy to use. Just click on the chat, and Mark will be watching the chat and tell me if there's things that I should address. But I want to show you this photograph. Ooh. So that is a old time service station, a gas station on Route 66 going near Santa Fe, New Mexico. And it's black and white. That's a photograph in black and white. Those cars, let's see if anybody knows what those are. Put it in the chat if you can identify those.
Mustang GT.
I think
I'm not going to say whether you're right or wrong, Reeb.
One is Dodge Charger, probably. One is Mustang. And the other one, I don't know.
Okay. Well, what this guy does, this artist, his name is Storm. There's his signature. So I know him. He's a kind of a friend of mine. His name is Dave Stern, Dan Stern. And he does custom photographs for people and their cars. And these three cars belong to one individual. And you're looking at $1 million worth of cars right there, everybody. And I'll tell you in a minute what they are. Has anybody put guesses in the chat, Mark? I'm not looking at it. I actually have the names of the attendees in front of me here, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I don't see anybody. Okay, so Alicia says Volkswagen, I think. That's what she says.
Well, anyway, what this guy does, Dan Storm, is he does custom photography of people's cars, and he has a whole set of these black and white pictures of real places throughout the United States or throughout North America, because there's some from Canada and some from Mexico. And then he edits them and puts the people's cars into the photo. So those are not really sitting out there in front of that service station. He had the picture of the service station in his portfolio. And there is a truck. You see that in the background? It's probably one that was filling the place with gas the day he was there, because that's still an active service station. And anyway, any guesses by the audience of what cars those are?
No, I don't see anybody putting anything here. Oh, somebody put Camaro. That might be
Russ. Yeah, Russ says Camaro.
Yeah,
well, Russ has seen these in my house live. He's cheating. They are Camaros. They're all three Camaros, but they're pretty special Camaros. The first one in the front, the blue one, was out with the headlights. There are headlights there. There's just grill that goes all the way. That was very weird at that time. That's a 1967, the very first year they made them. And the way you can tell that is by the only difference between that and the 68, which is the light blue one behind, is that it has wing windows on the side. These little windows right up there, you can't hardly see it in this one. The 67s have them. You see them when I put it closer? And the 68s. And so the light one's a 68 and the red one's a 69. And if you, again, were to try to buy those at an auction or a sale, that's $1 million worth of cars. And the one in front, the 67, is probably 600,000. The 68 is about 300,000 and the 69 is 100,000. And stupidly, I owned a 67 and sold it traded it for a van. So stupid. In about 73, I got a new 73 van for my Camaro. And if I just put it in a garage, it'd be worth $600,000 today. Mine was a little different in that it had the stripes. Those two, the light blue one and the red one, those stripes are from the factory. Those are not added. You could order them with the stripes. And my 67 had stripes right there on those two sides, just like this 68 and the 69. Anyway, I bought this from Dan at a garage, a flea market, we call them here in the United States. So, all right. Well, this is Talk with Wayne. I do have things that I'd love to talk about, and I'll pick topics here. but I'd really like to talk about what you want to talk about. It's open to you. And there's not a topic that is inappropriate other than things that would not be at all economic. But if they're economic, they're appropriate. And please ask them. We're using a new platform, Webinar Jam. And I don't know whether you can put numbers, whether there's a way to use this one and have little things go up the screen like you can do on Zoom now and Facebook. Is there anything like that, Mark? I don't know. But if you want to, there's a little hand over here. My cursor's on it right now. I don't know that you see that. I doubt you see my cursor because it's not sharing the screen. But where you can raise your hand, anybody that wants to do that, we will acknowledge you and you can speak. How hard was it to get into this compared to Zoom? There are several of you in the audience that I know are veterans that have been to a lot of our webinars and through the years. And tell us if this was easy. It was easy for me to get in as a speaker. Areeb, how about you? Easy to get in?
Oh, it was just one click, but then, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. So it was one click. I think I had the link. Then they tested my webcam. They tested my speakers, and then they let me in. So it takes about like 30 seconds.
Well, I don't think it'll be testing. Would people in the audience say, I doubt it did, because they're only going to speak if we say they can, and maybe it will then test their equipment.
Pretty far, isn't it? Really good. Are you okay? No issues.
Yeah, as an attendee, they don't need to like test their webcam or microphone. I think they need to just allow it, just give them permission to access their devices. But then
somebody be brave and raise your hand. Russ, you could be the brave one. You're not. Your tooth is bothering you a little, but we talked on the phone less than an hour ago, so I think you could talk for just a little bit at least. Yeah, Russ said 68 Camaro, then 70 Barracuda later. You were right the first time with the Camaros, Russ. Alicia made a couple of comments. I'm going to answer those in just a minute. Mark, did you put that little star by the comment you made? Or did that somebody, that's cool. How do we do that, I wonder?
Yeah, that's anybody who is organizer gets that. So if you do it, you'll get a star.
And what's the little question and answer only up there, Mark? Because somebody has responded to that. I have a little circle by that. But there's nothing there. It's empty. So I don't even know what that is.
I see that somebody typed in easy to get in. So
yeah, Lee Kochel.
Lee Kochel. Yeah.
And how good is the volume, everybody? How good is the picture? All those things. Just tell us, because the picture is unbelievable quality for me. I mean, I could see Mark and Areeb. Mark, share your screen. Let's pull up something. Let's pull up a page on our website. You share your screen by pulling up a page where the AI coach comes up. Okay. I want to show everybody AI coaches. So I was it EPN page? There's some place where you've already embedded it and where it comes up. Just work on it for a bit, and I'll keep talking.
Yeah, I'll pull it up. Take a second here.
So, Alicia, what is normal earthquake activity in Yellowstone? Yellowstone's very prone to earthquakes. And we had an earthquake here in Boise, Idaho, the other day that was so small that I'm not sure hardly anybody knew it, but it registered. And we're, what, Russ would know the distances better than me, but probably we're 300 miles, 250 from Yellowstone. And that the whole Rocky Mountain area is volcanic, but Yellowstone has got several very, you know, because of the hot springs, for example, are right at the surface. It's very potentially volcanic and active still. You know, over on the Pacific coast, we had Mount Hood that erupted back a number of years ago. And so there is a lot. I was wondering, though, did you ask it because there was an earthquake reported in the last several days or something in Yellowstone? Anyway, that's the answer. Very volcanic. Alicia's next question and a comment is wetlands, parks, and botanical gardens among the best ways to cool cities during heat waves? Oh, no question. More green surfaces, more trees, anything that as you look from above that's green is going to be improving heat is going to have a lower surface temperature than a city with just buildings. And it will definitely cool the air temperature in a city. And I bet you've noted it. If you've gone to, let's say, Central Park in New York, if you're in the middle of Central Park where you're sitting right by a pond, and there's trees around it and grass, it's 5 degrees cooler than in the high building areas that are around the park. I think Mark's putting up the screen. Here we go. So I'm going to ask a favor from one of you, and all it's going to require is you to type and to give us your email, but you've already done that. So it's not like you're giving us something you haven't already done. Only we're going to see it after we put it in. The audience will block it for a second, but otherwise I'll do it here. But this is something we're going to start adding to our websites. Let me just address a few more questions and comments that people had, and then we'll get to this. So just that's up there on the screen. We're going to talk about that in a second. Alicia says, any thoughts about the Farmer's Guide to the Galaxy, the future of agriculture on celestial bodies? I'm not aware of that, so I don't have any thoughts on it. If others do, just pull it in. I'm glad I know about it. I'll check it out, Alicia. Brian says, atmospheric dry wells / Canadian well for water harvesting. You're going to have to clarify what you mean by that question, Brian. I don't even know what an atmospheric dry well is. I know what Canadian wells would be, and can we harvest water? I guess I'm not sure. I clarify your question a little bit more. Russ said Yellowstone's 388 miles from Boise. Russ wants to talk about new developments and the removal of the 4 lower Snake River dams. That's a great topic, everybody. One that would take way more than this webinar to do, and we're gonna talk about it briefly. But Russ is a very active and intelligent person regarding that topic. Mark, why did you put in my talk with Wayne? Are people asking to be able to schedule with me, which is great. That's fine. And that's why that's there.
That's the same URL I use for this page.
Oh, okay. So that's the URL of the page that you're on now?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay. Brian clarified, and I'll get back to Alicia, who's in there also. Thoughts on efficiency and the value of Canadian wells. That's something that is worth some thought, worth some research. I can't say that I have great knowledge of it. I'll say this, there are U.S. wells, deep groundwater wells in North Dakota and South Dakota. So North Dakota being a state immediately adjacent to Canada, that are 1,000+ feet deep, and they're used for irrigation water for huge non-regenerative, highly chemical affected wheat farms and other crops. And they are drawing down the aquifers that those wells are in. They're depleting the water over time. And at a pace that we should think about, at least, it's not a good thing that the water levels are reducing. I was pretty pleased myself. I never even left viewing the camera and went around to grab my drink there. Brian said, I heard them reference the other way. So you heard them referenced as if they were doing good. I'm not sure why. So we might be talking maybe some blowholes or whatever. Well, water's going in. I don't know why I've ever heard of a circumstance where a well would, pulling water out of a well would add water to where the water's coming from that well. Now, water coming out of a well can be regeneratively used so that the vast majority of it goes back into the earth and ultimately would maybe end up back where those wells are. But you're on a topic now that I'm just not aware of. Alicia says, check out Brad Lancaster. Brad Lancaster is somebody that I would love to get as a speaker on EAT. He's down in Tucson, Arizona, and he is a world expert on harvesting rainwater. And it's something that he's got a massive amount of experience with. And he's a great speaker, a lot of fun to listen to. And somebody that, if any of you know him, we'd love to get on. And anytime you know a speaker, you have a better chance to get them if you don't. Alicia had one other comment about the Western Region locust plague of 1874. Any thoughts of the locust plague? And I'm assuming, is that going to happen in the U.S.? I doubt it. I think, unfortunately, we use so many pesticides that we've pretty much wiped out a lot of what are grasshoppers, which is what locusts are, that to where they're pains. They can't really ever right now. So I don't think that's a worry here. I think there are places in the world where a plague of locusts could occur again. I don't know, you know, I'm thinking of places like the steppe area of Russia or Mongolia or places where they're not heavily chemically farmed. And there could be, I mean, locusts feed on grains and plants with really good nutrient values. Yeah, Russ, Alicia just put a comment that you see there, the removal of the dams in the Klamath River, product of a decade-long push by Native Americans, environmentalists, and fishing groups to restore the natural flow of the waterway, which runs from southern Oregon's lofty cascades to the thick forests of northern. Whoa, what a great, that sounds like AI put that together. My guess is it didn't. She actually is quoting the San Francisco Chronicle. That's a huge thing that has happened. And it is putting more and more pressure on the regulators that can cause this to happen to remove the dams on the what's called the Snake River system in Washington, inland farther from the ocean than the Klamath is. But this was a huge win, in my opinion. I know in Russ's opinion. And I won't say our views aren't controversial, because there's a lot of people whose views about both that activity, that removal of those dams, and the removal of the dams on the Snake River system that Russ is alluding to, would not be a good thing. It is not just a cut and dry topic. It is controversial. Like a person said 2 years ago during the pandemic, and it's not a person that I admire, so I'm not even going to mention the name, but a person said a lot here in the United States, watch the science, listen to the science, don't be deceived by bad science or non-science. Russ and I believe strongly that the science says that those dams should be removed. And the science relates to native fish, the what we call anadromous. They go back and forth from the ocean to spawn up these river systems that have huge value for other than just the fact that they're fish. There's not evidence that those dams are serving what their original purpose was, which was to provide electricity in an area that's oversupplied with electricity. Hydroelectric power is not being used. There's only about 29% of it for the year round where it's being used. Moving grain back and forth from where big wheat farmers and some of the largest, most fertile wheat production land in the world is in Idaho and what in Eastern Washington, and mostly Eastern Washington, in what's called the Palouse Prairie. But there's not very many of those farms anymore, and they don't use the river to move their grain anyway. They use rail and they use trucks. And those dams have really never been used very well for moving that. There's some argument for floods, and that I think the science would argue against also, because those dams weren't there for millions of years, and there's an evidence that there's been big floods on the Snake River and Columbia River systems over millions of years, let alone hundreds of thousands. So anyway, very controversial topic, one which I'd love to get people to come that are experts to come and talk about. Russ, you should recommend who could be some of those experts, even though I know you are too, and you could certainly, I'd want you to come on and maybe be a host along with with others. I wonder if Areeb, it was interesting, Mark, because Areeb's a speaker and a host. I had a red thing come across the bottom of my screen that said Areeb has left the room.
Yeah, it said Areeb has left the building or something like that.
Okay, Brian, back to what he was saying, said he was only thinking about the atmospheric water harvesting. I hadn't heard about those examples of the dirty aquaculture around wheat or dirty agriculture around wheat, depleting those massive aquifers. Oh, and it isn't just as far north as I was describing. The bigger depletions are occurring in the states where wheat is hugely produced, Kansas, South Iowa, mainly Kansas, Iowa, Nebraska. East of the Missouri, there's a lot of rainfall. West of the Missouri, there's very little rainfall. And almost all of the wheat production west of the Missouri and the Mississippi, or the Missouri really, is dry land. So it's done where you have to have irrigation. there's not enough rainfall naturally to grow the wheat at the densities that they want to grow it in. Again, I'm not a proponent of that kind of farming at all, but the people that do it are very proud of all the wheat that they produce and how it's produced. But it's very water exhausting, very dependent on water. He's talking about atmospheric water harvesting. Mark, we should look that up. But let's go back to the page again now. I'm going to see if we can get people to interact with us again a little bit more and put in some answers or questions, excuse me, for the robot to answer. So this is a trained AI that is trained with my thoughts. And there's a whole process you can do that. And I'm going to read what it says there because it's pretty small print and I'm only seeing it probably because it's on my large screen. It says, resilient living coach, Dr. Economics, that's me. And then my picture is over on the left. Welcome to your personal AI coach. I'm here to assist you, to guide you. Let's get started on your path to success and well-being. That's what we'd hope for with Economics. Ask me questions I can help you with, and let's have a great discussion. Let's use some of the ones we just had here. Feel free to use any of the information I give you. One of the elements related to AI chat is that it cannot be considered proprietary for those that get it. So anything we get here is not, we're not stealing from somebody else. There are some real problems with fake data, and I'm a little worried we'll get some of it, but we're going to try to ask it questions. Mark, you're going to type and see if we can avoid it. So let's ask, can you help us understand the benefit of rainwater harvesting in Canada? Be thinking of other questions you guys want to ask. All right. So it gave a long answer. I'm going to read it. Mark, you're missing more than half of it. You got to scroll up a long way. There's a lot more to it than what you've got there. You got to scroll. There you go. Absolutely. Rainwater harvesting is an excellent practice that can be implemented in Canada. So this didn't get my question right, but let's read this. To conserve water and reduce reliance on municipal water supplies. Here are some key points to understand about rainwater harvesting. Number one, legal considerations. Before implementing a rainwater harvesting system, it's important to check local regulations and bylaws. Some places it's illegal, everybody, regarding the collection and use of rainwater. Some regions may have specific guidelines or permits that need to be followed. Number two, water collection in Canada. Rainwater can be collected from rooftops using gutters and drain spouts. It's important to ensure that the roof materials is suitable for rainwater collection, as some materials may leach contaminants into the water. That is a really important thought. Third, storage tanks. Rainwater is typically collected in storage tanks or cisterns. These tanks should be made from food grade materials and properly sealed to prevent contamination. Also really important. The size of the tank will depend on the amount of rainfall and the water needs of your property. Number four, filtration and treatment. Rainwater should be filtered and treated before use to remove debris and potential contaminants. This can be done using various filtration systems, such as sediment filters. Anyway, I'm not going to read all this. You can go in and get this. We're going to be putting this bot on a lot of our pages. So we hope to be able to give you more information. Maintenance, blah, blah, blah. Benefits, it's huge. Keep going, Mark. Go, let's scroll down. Remember, each region in Canyon may have specific considerations and requirements. Okay. Let's ask it. Can you recover rainwater in Canada from groundwater wells? And recover rainwater in Canada from groundwater wells. You skipped an A there in the word Canada. And groundwater is all one word. Groundwater is one word. I don't think you put it all in there, Mark. That's the wrong. Yeah, I'm going to teach you something about AI. They say garbage in, garbage out. We just got garbage in there, so we're going to get garbage out. Now, the cool thing is, nothing lost. You just go in and correct your error.
Really? Yeah, I think I entered by mistake, but I was going to finish the sentence.
Yeah, that's just that's kind of weird. So don't worry. We're not going to try to answer that. All of that's okay. It's given an answer. I don't think it's wrong, but I think it's so it did answer. You know, that you can build gardens. So this is back to Alicia's questions in big cities. Gardens will collect water and they'll put it into the soil. And the best place to store water is not in lakes and ponds or water containers. It's in the soil because soil will put it back into plants. Plants will then respire. And it'll go, uh-oh, we lost the screen. It'll go back into the atmosphere eventually. It's a great way to store water, way better than any other way. Anyway, now, Mark, let's just put in my email address or yours, whatever, so we keep going here. This is just a way we've added to this so we can, you know, get people to get engaged, and it's not for all you guys. While he's doing that, I'm going to check with the chat again to see if there's any other questions, and maybe we'll... Let's see if it'll weigh in, by the way, and tell us, give us an opinion about removing the dams. Let's do that. Give us your opinion on, and you spelled that wrong, Mark, and it's going to be garbage in. You have to spell stuff right in, when you're talking to, on the removal of the five dams. On removal of the five dams on the Snake River above the Tri-Cities. Tri, and it's dash cities. So there's a dash in there. Yeah, you put the I before the dash and then put the dash.
Okay.
Try dash cities. Right. And put the C back next to there. So take out that space. There you go. All right, let's see what it says here. As an economics coach and trainer, I approach environmental issues with a focus on finding solutions that balance ecological concerns with economic considerations. The removal of dams on the Snake River above the Tri-Cities is a complex and controversial topic with both pros and cons. On the ecological side, dam removal can have several potential benefits. and allows for the reforestation of natural river, for the restoration of natural river ecosystems, including the reestablishment of fish migration routes and the recovery of fish populations. Dams can disrupt the natural flow of rivers, affecting water quality, sediment transport, and the health of aquatic habitats. That's all true, by the way. Great argument. Removing dams can also have positive effects on the for other wildlife. That's very true. That depend on healthy river ecosystems. However, it is important and also consider the economic benefits, the impacts of dam removal. Dams provide what various benefits, such as water storage, irrigation, hydroelectric, recreational. I'm going a little bit of blah, blah, blah. And fishing for other kinds of fish. But unfortunately, that is a fishery that has never become established in 50 years. Removing the dams could have consequences for these. That's not giving its opinion about this river. That's just talking about it broadly. Therefore, any decision regarding removal of dams should involve a comprehensive assessment, I agree with that, of both the ecological and economic impacts. This assessment should include input from various stakeholders. So we're going to ask our next questions. We're going to get a little bit tough with this robot, with the colonomic, doctor of colonomics. Put an exclamation point there. What are the positive? Oh no! Again, Mark, that wasn't it. You got to slow down, Mark. That's the other thing, people. With AI, really think through what you put in. Again, no harm, but what? No, I want to go back and be tough with it. Come on, I screwed up. Now put and tell it. I screwed up. Oh man, I have got to answer a call here, guys. You'll know why in just a second. Hey, Jim, I am in the middle of a webinar, so I can't talk, but just let me know what's going on. I got this because this is a very important meeting for us.
No problem. I'm coming. I'm going to be a little bit late, about okay. 30 minutes. Is that okay?
That's fine. I'm here, so we'll great. See you. All right. Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, guys. Okay, I screwed up. I hit the return too quickly. So you want to? Now, put a period. Period. Please be specific about the Snake River, not generic about rivers in general. Give me positive economic impacts of the dam removal and negative economic benefits. Impacts. Don't hit return, Mark. Put a period. I want to put plural impacts of the dam removal, of the dam removal. I want you to give me the sources in academic style. For your thoughts. Thoughts. Put an S there. Thank you. And then hit return.
So it looks like it's confused now. Okay.
Here we go. No, it's not, but we'll see. Let's go up, scroll. It puts long answers in. I'm sorry for any confusion caused my previous response. That, when consider the potential economic impacts, the removal of the Tri-Cities, there are positive and negative factors to get by. I did it. So for points, positive economic impacts, recreation and tourism, dam removal can enhance natural. I'm going quickly. And this, the source of that is Snake River Dam's economic impact study by Eco Northwest, 2019. Russ, tell me if that's a real study. We can check it out. That's one thing you want to always do with AI. My guess is it is. That's not, they didn't make it, the bot didn't make that up. The next one is job creation. The restoration of natural river ecosystems could create employment opportunities, blah, blah, blah. And it's from the source, Snake River Economic Impact Study, Northwest Economic Policy Center, 2020. Also, probably positive. I mean, probably accurate. Negative, agriculture and irrigation. Dams provide water. This is going to be bogus. So I will tell you, because look at, so it says, it isn't, okay, let me finish reading it. I think this is not real, but let's see. Dams provide water for storage or irrigation, which supports agricultural production in the region. Removing dams could reduce water availability for irrigation, potentially impacting crops and farmer livelihoods. A study by Washington State University estimated that dam removal could lead to a 5% decrease in agricultural output in the Columbia Basin. Well, it says that study's there. We'll see if Washington State really did it. All right, what's next? That, again, that sounds real. Let's see. But is 5% real? Is 5%, you know, important? I don't know. Hydroelectric. Snake River dams contribute to the regional power supply through hydroelectric generation. Removing the dams would eliminate their power generation capacity, potentially leading to increased reliance on other sources of energy and potential impacts on energy prices. The Bonneville Power Administration estimated that replacing the lost hydroelectric capacity would require significant investment and could increase electricity. Could. Source. Potential cost for removing Lower Snake River dams and its impact on the Northwest power system by the Bonneville Power Administration, 2020. Finally, it's important to note that these, that isn't very specific, everybody. Russ is going to weigh in on that for sure, I would guess. But before I would ever do anything with this data, I'd want to check that out more. Now, let's ask it something to see if it really knows what it's doing here. And it is being me. It's gaining information from stuff I've written. And because this is supposed to be giving sort of my opinions. I don't question anything that it says there, by the way. Because it talks about it could lost hydroelectric capacity could involve increased electrical costs. Doesn't say it will, says could. Up higher, it did say it will improve fisheries and therefore increase economic benefit from the fishery side. It doesn't say it could, it says it will. It gets a lot more. Tell me the names of the five dams. I want to see if it really is going to get real here. Of the five dams on the Snake River above the Tri-Cities again, Mark, so spell that, Tri-City, and below Lewiston, L-E-S-L-E-W-I-S-T-O-N. Okay, return. I was going to have to cut this off right at 4 o'clock today because I had this meeting and that call I had was the guy I'm meeting with and you heard him, he's going to be a half an hour late. So we could go a little longer if we need to. I don't want to just hold people here though. Well, all right, let's see what it says. The five dams above the Tri-Cities are Ice Harbor. That's right. Lower Monumental. That's right. Little Goose. That's right. Lower Granite. Clarkston Dam, also known as Silcott Island Dam. I actually, Am I wrong? Did I screw up, Russ? Because I would not call Clarkston and should have only said four. I might have even screwed up in just describing that. But let's see if there are some other comments here. So Russ says, only 35,000 acres of farmland are irrigated in 164 miles of reservoirs and the entire length of the four reservoirs. So that's what it is. There's four reservoirs, and it's really that Clarkston Dam does exist there. It's interesting what it answered, but that's not normally thought of as one of the major dams. That doesn't block flow through the whole river. It, I think, is actually, Russ, did they take the bridge out over to the island, to Silcoat Island, and now put a dam there? Because that bridge was dangerous. So they might have left the island, put a little dam there. The river still would be going around it. That'd be an interesting new one to me. So water rights come from the river from Russ. I'm not sure what you mean by that, Russ. Clarify that. VUCA is an acronym based on the leadership theories of Warren Bennis and Bert Nanis. Okay. To describe or to reflect on the volatility, uncertainty, and complexity and ambiguity of general condition. That's kind of cool. I don't know what that means. What is the acronym? VUCA. Oh, volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. I would need to know that one way better. I'd have to study the theories of Bennis and Nanis. Great thought, Alicia, but I'm not sure that I know. Alicia, urban sponge cities to mitigate climate change. What's a sponge city? I'm not sure what that means. I think it probably means more highly vegetated, but I don't know. Any thoughts on the issue of microplastic? Oh, absolute thoughts. They're awful. They're killing us. Microplastics is going to be a massive issue way sooner than a lot of other things. We have got to get rid of them. We've got to get rid of plastic being put into landfills or just thrown anywhere. We can't use plastic like we can't. We got to get rid of it. That one is big time to me. Ask AI why the taxpayer should spend over $300 million supporting the dams that kill all the migratory fish and orca whales. Let's put that one in. Mark, you can read it right off of that. Just maybe you can just copy and paste it. That makes it easy for the next question.
Okay, I'm going to go and copy it. Let me see.
I love it. We're getting the audience to give us their thoughts. I don't want this to be my thoughts. Ice Harbor, hey man, you from England? You from England or Canada? You're spelling Ice Harbor as harbor like they do in the Canadian areas? Yeah? Harbor, H-A-R-B-O-U-R instead of O-R. Now, everybody's probably going, why does this guy know anything about these reservoirs? I worked for 3 years of my life, 5 days a week, most weeks, on that series of four reservoirs, Ice Harbor, Little Goose, Lower Granite, and Lower Monumental, and the reservoirs there, studying them on a grant and monies to see what their impact was on various things. And, okay, Mark put it in. That's cool. Let's put it back up. Mark's got it up there. Russ just put a no in there. I'm not sure what that, right? Vegetation and wetlands in urban areas. Absolutely. If we could put more vegetation, more wetlands in urban areas, Alicia, that would be positive. Yeah, but I'm going to put up a map here in a minute of that area. Oh, Mark, while I'm reading this question and the answer, put in either Google Earth map or whatever your simplest map, and take it to Lewiston, Idaho, and then bring it up, and I'm going to have you zoom in and zoom out of it. But let me read this first before you do that. As an economist, coach, and trainer, I can provide you some perspectives on the questions of taxpayers supporting dams that impact migratory fish and orca whales. It's important to consider the what we didn't do, Mark, is we should have asked to put in references again like we did in the previous question. Again, it's going to give us bogus stuff here now, but economic consideration, blah, blah, they provide various impacts. This is all just blah, blah, blah stuff. Not inaccurate, but it has nothing to do with the Snake River. So it didn't give us the answers because it gave us, keep going, scroll down, Mark. Nah, if you don't ask it for sources, it gives you nonsense. This is nonsense.
Should I?
No, don't worry about it now. Well, we can come back to it and okay. we can get sources.
All right.
But
so what is the
So put into a map some that we can zoom on, Lewiston, Idaho.
Lewiston, okay. So is it
L-E-W, that same one we put in that one prompt.
Okay. Lewiston.
Yep. Lewiston, comma, okay. Idaho is the location.
All right.
I think Russ said there really wasn't a dam to Silicone Island. I could tell you stories all day long about my experiences on the Snake River, including almost sinking a $100,000 boat that was owned by the University of Idaho that I was in charge of. We're going to give people that are looking at a distance context. All right, that's Lewiston. And now zoom out some, Mark. So go a little farther away from it. Farther yet. That's probably good. Nah, you don't need to go more. Let's even zoom back. No, that's probably fine. Now go to the other layer. Go to satellite layer rather than the map layer. It's right down in the drawing. It's layers there, right there. Mark. And go terrain. There you go. It's coming up. Now zoom back in again. I want to see if we can see Silicone Island. It's near Lewiston. Yeah, it's there. Go. You got to zoom more. Now go down below. See that bridge there on 15th Street. You got to scroll over. Yep. Keep going down the river. Keep going. The river is going to your left. Now you're leaving. That's the river above, Mark. We don't want that. You're going upstream. We want to go downstream. That's away. It's to your left. You want to go that way.
Yeah, I'm going the other way.
You're going to the right, the other way. There we go.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, there's Silicone Island right there. Let's zoom down towards that. That's not what I wanted. That gave terrain. You know what? Go back to layers again. We want to get the satellite view.
The satellite.
Click on more. See what it gives over there, because that's not giving us satellite. Oh, there, that is. That's satellite now. You have satellite now. That's it. Okay. That's what we want.
Uh-oh. How do I get out of here?
No, you're fine. Oh, just click that X. All right, now go to that Alpoa and zoom farther in. It's in the river, right where there's a Highway 12. I'm sitting here pointing at it. No, you're going upstream again, Mark. Go downstream.
Okay. I think this is the furthest I can go.
No, wait,
I can go more.
You can go all the way to the ocean going that way.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Do you want me, like, go up more?
I want to see that island. You're coming up there. Right at the edge of the screen is it's called Alpoa. That's actually, it used to be called Silicone Island. No, you left it. River's gone. You're gone. I don't know what you did. You're there. To the left.
To the left, okay.
Right there.
Oh, yeah, I think this is the one you're looking for.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Let's just see. Stop there. Put it in the middle. Now, blow it up more. Let's look and see as close as we can get to it.
All right. So I'm zooming in. Zooming in some more. So you see, now it's clear.
Stop. That's good. That's still, but yeah, no, it is on mine. I don't know about others. See that bridge going from Highway 12 over where it says restroom and bathhouse, whatever.
Right.
Russ, do you remember the story? Have I told you the story about that island and a car being driven off that bridge and into the river? That's where I thought maybe they had changed that bridge right there into a dam, and just because this is so dangerous.
So anyway, are they showing current here, like white water?
No, it's not. It's not a running. Those are boats, probably. Those are wakes from boats, or maybe it's the sun glare, Mark. I'm not sure.
All right.
But that Clarkston Dam that it mentioned, I don't know what that is. I'm gonna check that out. That I don't know what that was called. Now scroll away, so zoom out, because I want to show the dams. Not a lot, because we won't even see them if we don't. That's probably far enough. Now keep moving downstream on the river. You're gonna see how big these dams are.
So you want me to go scroll up?
Now it's straight up. Yeah. It's keep okay. following that downstream.
All right.
I think it's just the glare. That's the map that's causing that. These are reservoirs. You can't really tell that the water's flowing through them. They're called run-of-the-river reservoirs.
So this is part of Snake River, right?
Snake River. Yep.
Okay. Okay.
Keep going. It's a long way. You're going to go a ways.
All right.
Keep going. There. Stop there. That's Lower Granite Dam. That's the last of the dams. That dam is 140 feet tall, approximately. There's a fish ladder where the fish that are swimming up the river can go up it, but that's not that those ladders aren't that great. So there are a lot of fish lost. It's also got a lock system. So barges, river boats can go up it. Even pleasure boats can go up it. And let's zoom down. Let's put that in the middle. Let's zoom again and let's see it in a little more detail.
So you want me to close?
Let's go up closer. Again. Yeah, okay. Get closer.
All right. So does
that's
this
still
work,
pretty good view still. I have a lot of stories I'll tell later. We're not gonna do it today about these dams and some of the economic screwball situations of them. But that's for another day, another topic. There are three more of these big dams as you continue to go down. Ross, tell me if I'm wrong. I think this is 35 miles down to Lower Granite. It's about that distance. And then the next one down is Little Goose. So he's going towards it now.
So this one.
It's a ways, Mark. Keep going. That's just a bridge. That's not a dam.
Yeah.
There's no, we're not there yet. I was going to say there's
so a the dam. Highway looks like a thread here. So how big this river is. So these are real pictures, right?
Oh, yeah.
Satellite. Okay, this there's looks like dam. A dam.
There's the next dam. Yeah, there's a little goose. That one, if you notice, I think there the highway goes across. It does not go across Lower Granite, that one that was up higher. You're seeing the face of those dams right there in the picture.
Yeah.
That's an airport.
That's an airport here.
Right. So now zoom out more so people can see all the way down to the ocean.
Might have to. It's far away.
So. That's probably far enough out. Now just follow the river down to the ocean. Keep going the direction you were. It's down to the bottom of your screen now. There you go. So there's where it hits the Columbia River, right there. Now keep going. It's going downwards. Yep, keep going. That's the Tri-Cities. That's why I said the Tri-Cities. There's three cities there.
Yeah. So this is Highway 66, right? This one?
No, that's Interstate. 66 is farther south. There's Portland, big city. And the river goes up there, Mark, so follow it up. There it is. Now it's going to the left.
Here is the ocean. Okay. The ocean. Here we go.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So this is Pacific. Yeah, Pacific Ocean.
All right. Let's just see if there's other comments and questions here, and we're going to probably call it a day. Yeah, there's no irrigated farmland. Right. We weren't really looking at the farmland there, but if we would have, we would have seen that that was the case, that there's not a lot of it. This was fun, everybody. Every Thursday, 3 to 4, not everyone. I take a break every now and then, and I want some guests. You guys got to get bold, raise your hands and come up and talk, get some people to come on here with me. This is not just me. I want to talk with Wayne. Don't just use your fingers. But that the AI that we showed there was no hallucination. Nothing it did there was inaccurate. It was a little biased in places, but not, horribly. Guys, you were all awesome. A lot of you stayed around and stayed late. Thank you so much. I hope you really know I mean that. We're going to keep improving this. Throw in ones. That's our way to say you liked it. If this was fun and you enjoyed it, throw in nines if you hated it. Put in fives if it's kind of in the middle. And we'll end right after you put those in. Nobody's putting anything in, Mark.
I put in some ones. So here's one from me.
Mark did.
Yeah. Yep.
We'll wait just a second.
Alicia says she has a comment here. Let's see.
Well, I'm Googler. I don't know whether they are different views, Mark. There's different satellites. And so Google Earth gives one view. Maps gives another view. Apple Maps gives another view. They're all just a little bit. They're really at what point in time that they were taken. So the images come from different days.
Yep.
All right. Everybody got real quiet with their fingers. Thank you guys so much. This was fun. Got the sun shining in my window here. It's shining off my glasses now.
Really nice.
It's raining and snowing, and I'm glad the sun's out. Oh, wow. I've got a little work to do before this guy comes to meet me in about 20 minutes. And thank you so much. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Areeb. Areeb's gone, but this was fun. We'll be back next week, and we want some other speakers. Help find us some speakers, everybody. Anything else? Going once, going twice. Take us out, Mark.
All right.
Hey, everybody.
I bet you enjoyed that immensely. That was one of our most amazing presentations here at the EAT community. Please look forward to our next podcast in the very near future, and we look forward to seeing you again on the EAT Community Podcast.